This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 32, where I talk with Ice Galaxy about their poem, White Dress. I hope you enjoy.
My name is Eleanor. I am Ice Galaxy, and I will be reading a poem called White Dress. Moonlight slicing through the forest like a silver knife, shedding light on the rotting leaves that decorate the earth floors of the hidden world behind your daily home. During the hot hours of daylight, you work as a waitress, carrying fake plastic dishes caked with strawberry slime, half-eaten burgers, and empty salt packets. Later in the thick of the afternoon, you go home and wait for your lover to bring the alcohol home, a special kind he introduced to you that dulls the pain. In the cool hours of night, you go to bed and do not sleep, wondering how you will pull yourself out of the daily spiral you have fallen into. Tonight is different. You wake up a little past midnight, and this time you stand up, slink out of the possessive arms of your lover whom you don't love, but only tolerate because you have to. Walk silently so as to not wake your lover, and pull out the travel trunk from underneath the staircase. Open the rusted lock with a bronzed key hanging from a silver chain around your neck, and finally pull out that silky white dress. Your mother wore this dress when she was married, made from beautiful, thin silk with a full skirt and flowing sleeves. You slip it on over your body and walk outside, and the silence of the night screams. Now the fireflies wink in and out of sight, dancing along with the song played by the stars, the trees, and the faraway ocean. You lift your face to the wind, and it caresses your face, telling you that everything will be okay. You look to the moon, and she nods at you, telling you to be strong. You sift the soft earth through your fingers, and it tells you that it will get better. And for the first time in your life, you know what it feels like to be calm.
Yay, thank you so much. So what was your inspiration for this?
So usually when I write poetry, I write two specific types, like one based on current events that happen around, and one just purely for imagery. So this one was just purely going for some strong imagery on this one. I had no real inspiration behind it, just typed and let the words flow out.
That's great. And how did you develop such strong imagery? Like you're talking about, like, do you imagine a specific experience or a picture you've seen? Or how does that kind of come about?
As Stephen King once said, you have to read a lot to be able to write well. And I read more than possibly anyone in my family. And I've picked up certain lines and certain phrases here and there. And then I normally give it my own little twist. Like moonlight slicing like a knife, that was a line I picked up from one of my favorite books, but it was like moonlight sort of unsheathed like a blade, and I sort of twisted that to slicing like a knife. So a lot of it just comes from books that I read and other imagery I find.
I think that's great. Books are definitely a great way to get inspiration, and also a really inspiring place for me to find things to write about, because I feel like when I read books, I read so many different genres, so there's always something I can take from it. I feel like books are a lot of the reason why I got into writing, because I was seeing like all the different ways that you can make a story. I get a lot of inspiration from books, and I can totally relate to what you're saying, because like, you know, you kind of find something that you like and you don't, you know, copy and paste it. You like kind of reword it in your own style. And that's almost more special than reading it itself, is like taking something from it.
Exactly.
So what was the first line that you thought of, and how did you go from there?
It wasn't a first line, more so as an image of just like a regular, maybe mid-20s, late-20s, early-30s young woman, and just like in a white dress, staring up at the moon with like a forest behind her at night. I was like, I should write a poem about that, because that just like popped into my mind in the middle of history class. So I just took that image, tried to get the imagery I wanted to the best of my ability, and went from there.
That's really interesting that you started with like an image, because I think a lot of people start more with like a phrase or something like, oh, I'm so sad, I'm so happy, or whatever, and then they make imagery off of that. So it's cool that you kind of did it in reverse. What line or phrase or image felt like the turning point, or like you had finally captured what you had been imagining?
Ooh, that one's tough. Probably you look to the moon and she nods at you, because that's sort of personifying something. I mean, a lot of poems talk about like the star, the moon, all inanimate objects, and then they give it a mystical twist to that. And I sort of wanted to do that. And once I got that line, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. So it's towards the end, but that was like the starting point. That's like, okay, this is a good one.
I love that feeling when you're writing and you're like, oh, that is amazing. That just makes me so happy. Yesterday was my birthday, actually, and I went to this bookstore. It's in Middlebury, Vermont, and it's just like this kind of creepy warehouse, but inside it's like floor-to-ceiling bookshelves with hundreds of thousands of books. They have like over 100,000 books.
That is amazing.
It's the most beautiful place I have ever been to. It makes me so genuinely happy, and I just feel like there's this like interesting phenomenon about it where like you walk in and the only thing you can think about is the books. Like, you can't be happy, you can't be sad, you can't be thinking about like, I gotta do this homework, I've gotta talk to this person, I've gotta do this and that. Like, you just walk in and it's books. It's magical.
That's how I feel like whenever I walk into my local bookstore. I just go in, head straight to the young adult section. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I pull a random book off. Sometimes I just look around for a couple minutes, sift through, and then I go over, sit by a window, and just read. And do that like every Friday afternoon, and it is just such a nice way to blend out the world.
And like everything around you just disappears, and I feel like
it's
such a magical thing, and it just fills me with so much joy. Like, that's my favorite place in the world, and like, honestly, going to any bookstore is just like, it makes me so happy. And I feel like going to a bookstore to me is just as much of an experience as like reading a book, you know, because you're going to this like space where everyone's quiet, you know, there's not like all these sounds going on around you, and like, you're not doing homework and stressing about getting everything right. You're not driving and stressing about like getting in a car accident, you know, like it's worry-free, and it's a time when you can just be really present with yourself.
Exactly.
So that's the magicalness of bookstores. There are so many lines in here that I love. Like, we talked about moonlight slicing through the forest like a silver knife, shedding light on the rotting leaves. And there's a bit of eeriness in this, like the forest might have something creepy in it.
That was sort of the angle I was trying to go to. Like, I want to make it mystical, but also want to add in a little bit of, as you said, a little eerie and hinted and a little dark at some edges.
Yeah, like there's a creepy forest and you're almost like, is this a dangerous poem? Like, is something bad going to happen? Or is it going to be really cool? And I like that kind of mystery that's going on. And I also think it's so cool how this poem is written in second person using you as a pronoun. And I think that it really makes the reader feel like they're fully immersed in the poem, because sometimes there can be a little bit of a disconnect between the narrator and the reader, because, you know, you could be like, oh, well, the narrator's a girl and I'm not a girl and I don't really identify with that. Or you could be like, the narrator's older than me and I'm younger, and just like kind of those differences doesn't really make it like, I guess, relatable, but having you makes it feel like, oh, wow, it's me, you know, in that experience.
And ironically, second person is actually the one thing I struggle with, because usually when I usually write in first person and never write in third person. I just don't like it. And to me, second person, as you said, gives it like a much more relatable feeling, because you can actually feel like you're in there, and doesn't matter how old the character is, because it is you, as the writing suggests. And you can just read something and be like, okay, I connect with that. I might not connect with that, but I absolutely agree with this. And it's me in that poem.
Yeah, I think that's really like what's interesting about it, is that there's like this universality. I think that's a word.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we hope. Because like, it just feels like it's me, and it feels like it's a lot more personal and intimate, and it's not something you have to force yourself to imagine.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of writers, they'll try to get, I struggle with this a lot sometimes too, they'll try to get imagery they want, but then they lose parts of that imagery because they're so focused on one thing. Like, a writer's every goal is to make a person connect with that story. It doesn't matter if it's emotionally, just you feel like you belong in that or you relate to stuff. You want the reader, whoever it may be, to connect with what you write. And I struggle with that. I have friends who struggle with that. And I've met many people here and there who struggle with that. And it's a work in progress, but once you get that feeling of like, oh, they're absolutely going to connect to this, you can just write and have fun with what you create, because it's so nice once you can find something you relate to. It doesn't have to be like something that has personally happened in your life, but you can relate to it in more ways than one. And that's one of the things I love about writing and reading.
I completely agree with that. I've also struggled with that because I feel like sometimes when I write about personal experiences, you know, my perspective can be kind of niche and like other people might not really connect with it and they might not see like, you know, the complexities of like my experience with the people involved. You know, they don't really understand that aspect. I have struggled with making my writing more like relatable, I guess, and something that readers can connect to. But I think that the only thing I've really done to make my writing relatable is to just like write how I feel. And I mean, feelings are relatable. That's like pretty much the only thing everyone has in common. So like if you write about love or happiness or sadness or grief, someone's going to relate to it. And so I feel like just knowing that someone will relate to it makes it easier instead of being like kind of hard on yourself about it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, moving on. Some more lines. During the hot hours of daylight, in the thick of the afternoon, in the cool of the night. And I thought it was really interesting how each time of day has its own kind of temperature and mood. What was your inspiration for that?
Again, from another book I read, who I sadly have forgotten the title of, but that author, who I've also forgotten the name of, they really like taking time and inanimate objects and other stuff like that and giving them their own describing words, adjective, verbs. They give them so much more detail than just a pen or 9 o'clock. And like when I think of day, since I live in a place with four very strict seasons, it's very hot in the summer. It can get insanely heavy, like that kind of weather that you feel like you're just drowning in a bucket of honey in the afternoon. And then night comes and it's so much easier to breathe. That was sort of what I was going for when I wrote those lines.
I definitely get that from it. And it's actually kind of funny that you said four seasons, because in Vermont, there's kind of this joke that there are five seasons where there's like summer, fall, winter, spring, and mud season, which is when it rains and all the snow melts. There's mud everywhere. Like it's in your shoes, it's in your clothes. It's on your car. Like, you cannot escape it. And so it was that just reminded me of it. But I thought that's really cool. Yeah, personification is a really, really cool way of adding more oomph to your writing and making it seem not like more professional, but more like poetic, I guess, by, you know, giving a time of day a character, or by giving like a book a character, by saying like, oh, the book was lonely when it sat on the bookshelf or something like that. Like that's personification. And I feel like that's so beautiful. And that is really what draws me to poetry and to writing in general, is when like writers can make characters out of inanimate objects.
Exactly. Like one of the things I think about when I think of writing is like, I literally have a list of 5 rules of writing that I follow for myself. And number 5 is, it does not have to make sense. Because it doesn't. Poetry for me is like, you can put random words on a page and maybe it won't make sense to one person, but to another person, they'll be like, oh my God, I so relate to all of this. Even though it's just a bunch of random words or letters, you will find someone out there who can relate to that in one way. One person may see it as just a bunch of random stuff. Another person may see it as a brain dump. Another person may see it as an explosion of emotion and literacy. And that's just one of the things I love about poetry, because it can be literally anything.
I agree. And I feel like people ask me sometimes, like, how do you write poetry? What are like your, I don't know, secrets or whatever to writing poetry and stuff? And it's like, I don't know. I just kind of wing it. I mean, if it sounds good, then I write it down. If people like it, then they like it. I mean, my whole writing style is just really not trying to write. Writing sometimes is not trying to write. And that doesn't make a lot of sense.
But no, it absolutely makes sense.
You know, just like, it doesn't have to be straightforward. It doesn't have to be like this and this and this and this. You know, it can go in circles. It can be like non-linear, you know, and you don't have to follow like the same path as everyone else, which is important, not just in writing.
Fair.
But in lots of other things.
Yes.
So, continuing, fake plastic dishes caked with strawberry slime, half-eaten burgers, and empty salt packets. You go to bed and do not sleep. Open a rusted lock from a bronze key hanging from a silver chain around your neck, and finally pull out that silky white dress. The imagery here is so cool. It's almost like watching a movie. And how did you kind of develop the scene and the setting? And were you imagining a specific movie?
No, I was not imagining a specific movie. For the first line, fake plastic dishes with strawberry slime, etc., I actually got that from my mom, who worked at a restaurant when she was 16 to 18 to like make a little money. And one of the things that her restaurant did was they were known for like strawberry cheesecake, but the thing is they would always, like, whatever strawberry stuff was left over, they would scrape off and save for the next day. So I'm just like, that's both disturbing and interesting. So I put that in, and half-eaten burgers and empty salt packets. I was just hungry when I was writing this, honestly. Go to bed and do not sleep. I did not have an image in mind for that or for any of these, but a lot of the time, especially at the beginning of quarantine for me, it was just staying up all night, staring out of my window, like, when will this pandemic be over? When will we get a vaccine? How will politics work out? And I just incorporated that because we all have those nights where we either literally cannot sleep or just don't want to sleep because we don't know what the next day will bring. And open the rusted lock with a bronze key. That is probably my favorite line in the entire piece. I really like key necklaces for some reason. I really love the movie Coraline, which keys play a big part in. So I guess I may have taken it from there, but I was just imagining like a long chain with some sort of key hanging off of it that means something to the person in that poem.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely relate to going to bed and not sleeping because last night I was thinking about, you know, oh, it was my birthday, I had so much fun before I went to bed. And then suddenly I was like, oh, I have an assignment due today, and I didn't do it. Ooh. And I was freaking out, and I like couldn't go back to sleep for a while, and I had to like write it down and be like, okay, the first thing I'm gonna do when I wake up is write to my professor and say, I'm so sorry I never submitted it. And I was like kind of freaking out about it because I'm a goody two shoes and all that. So
I can relate to that.
I know. So like I was trying to go to bed and just trying to like turn off the thoughts in my mind. And then of course I start going to like poetry as I always do. And I start thinking of all these lines. And I was like, oh, that would be a good poem. And then my brain's just going in like circles, like a bee on like a trampoline or something. And so it's like, it's kind of difficult to calm my brain down at night. But a lot of times I do think about like what's going to happen with the world, what's going to happen to me in the world. And like, how is, you know, the next year going to affect the rest of my life, sort of? And I mean, that's a lot to think about. That's like really overwhelming sometimes. So, I mean, I don't really know how to fix it, but thinking about the future can really be stressful.
It can be stressful, but it also can be cleansing sometimes.
I actually kind of agree with that. I mean, there's something a little bit like therapeutic about daydreaming about like what you could do and think about like, what if I live in like a cute little apartment above a little restaurant and like, I have a little pink fridge and a little pink dishwasher. I think there's a company that makes pink fridges from like,
companies.
I don't know what the company is called, but I listened to a whole podcast about it actually because that's how cool I am. But yeah, another thing related to that is that I turned 17, and
congrats!
Thank you so much. And while I'm excited to still be alive, I'm also kind of terrified to still be alive because, I mean, you turn 17 and then you're 18, then you're an adult.
Yep.
And it's like, once you get to be an adult, at least in my eyes, like, you know, you have to be responsible. You can't have excuses, you know? You can't say, I'm just a kid, or I don't have access to this, or I, you know, I need help with this. You kind of are expected to figure it all out. And that's really stressful to me because I feel like I don't know how to do so many things. And there's so many things that I'll probably never be able to do. So
yeah, last year I got 1B and then I got straight C's on my report card in math just because I was absolutely terrified of asking for help. And I still am sometimes, but I'm only 12. And then I still have like 5.5 years until I become 18 and a legal adult. And it's like, yes, I'm going to be older. I'm going to break free. I'm going to be out. Sorry, mom and dad and whoever other family might be listening to this, but I'm going to be my own person. Everything's going to be perfect. But then it's like, what if I can't get a job? What if I can't get a car? What if I just wipe out and then I have to go back to my parents' house? Because like, I'm the kind of person who is scared of failure a lot of the time. So it's like, want to do this, but also don't want to do this. Because what if something goes wrong?
I completely agree with that. I'm like so terrified of failure and like just not being good enough. And it's just like, it really bothers me when I'm not good at things, which I know is exactly. It's kind of like a bratty thing to say. Like, I don't like it when I'm not good at things, but that's how I feel. Like, I'm kind of a perfectionist in that way where like, I want to be perfect at everything. I don't want help. I want to get it right on my first try. That's really not easy because like, first of all, it's impossible. And also you're constantly putting so much pressure on yourself and it's a lot really to deal with. And yes, when you get to be 17 in however long, I mean, you do have to deal with those thoughts of like, what if I don't get a job? And like, that's what I'm thinking about right now. I mean, I'm in college early, but going on to college, not this fall, but next fall. And I'm already thinking like, I'll need a car. And how am I going to pay for a car? I'll need a job. And how am I going to get a job? And like, you know, you're asking yourself all these questions and no one's really saying like, I'll do it for you. You know,
you're like expected to do it on your own.
Yeah. Like when you're a little kid and you like can't open a juice box, you know, you can't put a straw in a juice box. Sounds like, oh, I'll help you do that. Or you can't like, I don't know, put on your little swimmy float things. Like someone helps you. But like when you're trying to find a job and like find a car and get your license, no one's like, here, I'll help you with it. You know?
Yeah.
And that's the tough part about growing up is that like you realize, oh wow, I've got to help myself. And like, that's really deep. This is kind of off topic, but I mean, I think a lot of people are going to be able to relate to that kind of thing. And I feel like a lot of teenagers are just kind of struck with that suddenly, you know, you get to like your last year or two of high school and suddenly everyone's like, what are you doing for the rest of your life? Like, write it out day by day for like the next 20,000 days of your life. You know, you have to know exactly what you're doing.
And I mean, I sort of feel like you can move once you're an adult. Yes, you have freedoms, but you also have limitations, but you don't have as many limitations as you do when a kid. I mean, yes, you have to pay taxes and yes, you have to pay for college, but you can also move around from job to job. You can experiment, see what works for you because that's just part of living as how I think of it. So yes, it can be a total train wreck, but you still have people who love and support you and they will always love and support you. So you've always got someone on your side, no matter who you are. You always have like, whether it's your best friend from kindergarten or your aunt twice removed, you're always going to have someone.
Yes, I completely agree. I mean, I'm not trying to be like a Debbie Downer, like you're all alone, but like there's always going to be someone who supports you and it may be someone unexpected.
Yeah.
Really. And that's really great is when you have someone who's just got your back no matter what and they're not going to judge you or tell you that what you're doing is completely wrong. And I do think you can jump around when you're an adult, but at least for college, I feel like a lot of times you should know what you're doing. And what's funny to me is that a lot of colleges are emailing me now and they want me to apply pretty much to their college. And they're like, hey, we've seen all that you've accomplished. You're so cool. Join our college. And I feel like it's a little bit pathetic because they're colleges I would never go to. Like they're just for like engineering and stuff, which I'm not interested in. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, wow, it's for me. Thank you so much. I feel like really flattered in a really weird way that I can't really like, describe, but it's almost like getting a Valentine from the weird kid that you don't like.
You know? Like, I can relate to that.
Like, you don't want it from that person, but it's still really nice.
Yeah.
So that's my whole analogy for that. And anyway, back to your poem. Another line, the silence of the night screams, and I love this so much. And like paired with the eerie forest from before, it gives me kind of like horror movie vibes, but in a really cool way. And it's kind of like that feeling of, you know, when you're in like an empty hotel, like you're all by yourself in a hotel.
Oh, that's all like by one of my worst fears.
Or like all by yourself in a grocery store, you know? Like, it's eerie, and you don't know what's going to happen, and, like, it doesn't really feel like it's real.
Yeah. That was also sort of taken from the pandemic, because, like, March 13th, okay, all you kids, go home. It's fine. We have 4 weeks. Everything's gonna be okay. Well, guess what? COVID cases start rising, so that's fun. But then, like, everything goes quiet. You don't have babies crying in supermarkets. You don't have, I mean, I live next to a highway, so I hardly hear anyone rushing down. Like, or honking horns or anything like that. Can't go outside to see my friends, can't go across the park, can't really do anything. And that was like, okay, the world just went silent except for the news feeds, which are now screaming at us about COVID stats and politics. So that's enjoyable. It's also related something to me because this is going to sound like not cynical, but it might not make sense. Like, sometimes I want to scream loudly so people can hear me, but also scream quietly so people can't hear me. Does that make any sense? Yeah. I want you guys to know I'm frustrated, but I don't want you to know how frustrated I really am. So I just, like, took those two things, combined it together, and got that line, which I really like.
I do, too. The silence of the night, you know, with COVID, like, no one's out, is much more powerful than hearing a bunch of people out and about.
Exactly.
You know, and like being reminded of all the people around you. So that's really interesting. And another line, now the fireflies wink in and out of sight, dancing along with the song played by the stars, the trees, the faraway ocean. You look at the moon and she nods at you. You sift the soft earth through your fingers and it tells you it gets better. And this kind of like communication with nature is so cool and reminds me of like a fairy tale or like Snow White. What was your inspiration for that?
So I actually had two inspirations. One, a friend of mine who sadly moved away to Japan, but she is absolutely in love with nature and she will like spam our hangout with like what this environmental activist is doing. And it is so cool. So I got a little bit of that from her. And the second thing is my grandparents live 6 hours away in Southern Virginia and they have like a very large and very pretty backyard with like rolling hills and a vegetable garden and a bunch of deer. And at night, you would not believe how many fireflies there are. It is just like one dot of yellow here and another here and another here and another all the way over there. And my sister and I, when we were younger, we would take out our little bug catchers and go around chasing the fireflies and trying to find them. And on clear nights, you can see so many stars in the sky, and sometimes you can even see the Milky Way in the summer, and those are, like, pictures and little memories that have stuck with me, and I sort of incorporated that into what I was writing here.
That's so cool. I don't know if I've ever seen a firefly. Are there fireflies in Vermont? I don't know. I'll have to look that up. Maybe I'm just, like, kind of weird, but that's really amazing. I do think it's really cool because I live like sort of in the suburbs too in Vermont and there's still like a bunch of wooded area in our neighborhood and there's a bunch of deer and sometimes they'll just like be in the middle of the road like in front of my house. I'll be like, oh, there's a deer.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of just other wild animals and it's so cool because you're like at the same time you're 5 minutes away from like the main road in Burlington and you're also right next to like dozens of different animals. So it's kind of this cool like, duality that Vermont has. In Burlington especially, like you're close to the city, but you're also really close to nature. So your ending, for the first time in your life, you know what it feels like to be calm. What was your inspiration for this?
I actually don't know. I mean, That may have been one of the lines that I was like, that just popped into my head at night, because there are some moments, like when I'm skating out, playing hockey with friends, when I'm just writing, when I'm playing guitar, that it's like, okay, I'm calm, I'm centered down. The world doesn't care who I am. Doesn't matter that there's COVID. Doesn't matter that the politics are going haywire. Doesn't matter about anything like that. I'm just myself, and I am safe, and I'm doing okay, and I am calm. And it's not like for the first time in my life, but it feels like that sometimes, given how hectic the world has become.
That's really great that you can have that like sense of calm doing things that you really enjoy. So, some more questions about writing. How did you first become interested in writing?
Oh gosh, that's a tough one. I mean, I've always loved reading. My parents literally have videos of me as 3 or 4 reading an Ella the Elegant Elephant book. And supposedly I had memorized the entire book, but I couldn't actually read. So my parents would like start me on a page and I would pretend to read. But if my dad had skipped a page while reading it to me, I'd be like, wait, no, go back. You missed a page, even though I couldn't literally read. And I don't know. I mean, I had a third grade teacher named Mr. Gonzalez who, like, I showed him a short story I'd written. He was like, this is amazing, Eleanor. I'm just like, thank you. Well, like, not with a breathless voice, but, like, it felt like that. And since then, I've been writing for pretty much as long as I can remember, just taking random thoughts, jotting them down. I'm still writing in a journal that I've had since 2017, honestly. It's falling apart at the seams, but I really don't know my main inspiration, probably from books, because I just love books, and I was like, I want to be an author when I grow up, because books are just absolutely amazing, and as Thomas Jefferson once said, I cannot live without books and music, but books too, so.
For sure. I second that on books and music. And on a related note, what books and authors have shaped you as a writer and a human being?
That's a good one. For my 10th birthday, I was a big, big, big Stephen King fan. I have like 5 of his books on my shelf. And my dad got me a copy of his very well-known book on writing. And I was like, okay, it's fine. Not good. And then I went back to that when COVID came. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. How have I missed this before? And that book has definitely shaped me. I mean, if you've never read it, he talks about like writing style and inspiration and his own path as a writer and like even how to get published, which I was like, So there's him. There's also probably Shannon Messenger, who I just love as an author because she writes in such a fun and inspiring way, but she also doesn't hide truth and honesty. And that's what I really look for. And that's what I really look for in a book, like something that's happy and nice, but also does not sugarcoat things. Then that brings me to the third and probably final author who shaped me, Ellen Hopkins, which a friend of mine has introduced me to her recently. She is an author who writes her books in verse, and that is something that I really enjoy doing, but the formatting takes forever. And her books are just brutal, raw honesty from teenagers, and like, she just writes in such a beautiful format, and her poetry is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I definitely can relate to that. A lot of times I read books just for the writing style itself and not even for like the contents. And sometimes I skip the contents just because I want to read like the way that the author writes. Like, I'm really into Margaret Atwood right now. Her writing is so amazing. Like, the way that she writes is just chef's kiss. So I'm really enjoying her right now. I read The Handmaid's Tale. It was fantastic. Ooh. And I got Cat's Eye and I think The Tenants yesterday. So I'm going to read them soon. I'll let you all know what I think about it. But yeah, I think that verse books are so cool because they're so unique.
Oh yeah.
And like so powerful too.
Exactly.
Do you think that your poems have soundtracks or like, you know, kind of music that you listen to while writing or music that inspired you to write?
That's a good question, actually. Music, hockey, and writing are like and reading, but that's like a subset. Those are like my big three that kept me sane in the pandemic. And like music and writing often go together because love music and I love writing. If you ask me which one I love more, I would probably start crying and ask why you hate me. So I make my own music, I play music, and I listen to a lot of music. Not enough, but a lot. And some of the poetry I write, I have like classical, like this song, it's like a little classical piece with a woodwind section and the violins just running through my head so I can get like that mysteriousness, but also serenity of that. Others, it's just like my parents took it upon themselves to educate me on 70s, 80s, and 90s rock. So applauds to them. Sometimes tracks can be like absolutely loud guitar riffs, but I'm cool with that. And they'll always just go together in a sense for me. So sometimes I'll play a song, listen to a song. It's like, oh, wait, that line was so good. Let me make something out of that, or vice versa. And yeah.
I definitely feel the same way. I listen to so much different music like all the time because I listen to it while I'm doing homework and also for my homework, like as my homework, because
yeah,
I'm taking a rock and roll class, actually, intro to rock and roll.
Wow.
Very funky. The whole situation is so funky. And so
that's
I get to listen
cool.
to like a bunch of music for that every week, and then also music that I want to listen to on my own. And it's so cool to me how like I can get inspired by music. Sometimes it's by like the music itself. Sometimes it's by the lyrics. Sometimes it's about like the whole vibe about it. But I really do think that they go hand in hand because it's, you know, an experience. I don't really know how to phrase it, but like something that you can just get lost in, you know, and something you can mm-hmm. relate to, something you can just enjoy. And
exactly.
I think music is just amazing. It's fantastic. It's just immaculate. And so is poetry too. And I think it's really interesting when people can combine the two.
Oh, yes.
All right. So last question. What warm-ups do you use to get your writing flowing?
I don't use any. I mean, I've never actually heard of, I mean, my friend is an amazing artist and also an amazing fantasy writer, and she'll do like quick sketches of characters she's writing in books and then go full out on detail and stuff like that. But sometimes I don't really have like a designated warm-up per se. Sometimes I'll jot off like a quick idea or a quick haiku or something like that. And then often most of my days are just sitting at a computer waiting for inspiration to come. And I mean, I don't know. I don't like listen to any specific song, read any specific type of poem, write anything specific. I don't have much of a designated warm-up.
Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people probably feel the same way. I don't really do a warm-up either, but sometimes if I write like a short poem, then I go into like several longer poems. So just like starting the faucet makes the water run a lot faster. That's an interesting analogy. But
that's
actually, I lied. There's one more question. How did you discover YWP and what role does it play in your life?
Okay, so it was actually a Christmas present for my grandmother this year. She was like, hey, I found this thing that I think you'd be real interested in. Like, okay, that's cool. That's fine. And then she's like, here, I'll show you the website. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Because not many of the people I know or not many of my friends can write poetry, sort of like, I'm not bragging here, but like, I don't think they understand poetry in the way I do, because it's so like vital to me and such a step beyond regular words on a paper. So I created an account, signed up, entered the Celebration of Tree contest maybe 4 times. I don't know. But then just went from there, and it's played a pretty, I mean, I joined in early January, so it's been about a month now. It's played a pretty big role in my life because I'll finish my class and I'll ask my mom, hey, can I go on Youth Writers Project? She's like, did you finish your homework? And then, of course, me doing my guilty face, she's like, go finish your homework and you can come back. And it's like, Okay, but it's just it's a very fun environment and I do like it, and it's just a place where I can write and just be myself. And my dad walked in on me writing one day and he's like, "Are you blogging?" And I'm just like, "It's called writing poetry, not blogging." He's like, "No, that's blogging." So, yeah.
I'm glad that you like it and that you've been here for a month. Wow, happy anniversary. We're so
Thank you.
glad to have you here at YWP. As I think Troublemaker wrote in the Tiny Right section, that YWP has bean bags and maple ice cream. So we're glad to welcome you to all of the bean bags and maple ice cream.
Thank you.
YWP is so cool. I've been here for like 4.5 years now, a
Oh,
while.
wow.
Since I was about your age, actually. Oh, that makes me sound old. Whenever someone says, when I was your age, it's just like, oh, you're old. Anyway, I joined a while ago and it's just made me so happy. And I feel like I can really express myself without like being criticized, without being told, like, that's not good. That doesn't have good grammar. That's a sentence fragment. And like,
Exactly.
I can really just embrace my writing and enjoy it and like really just be happy with it. So I'm so glad that we both enjoy YWP and thank you so much for being on the podcast with me. This is so cool to talk with
Course.
you.
Thank you.
This has been episode 32 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed and stay tuned for episode 33. Bye.